Welcome to How Now, the podcast where we talk about how to live in the now. And here's your host, Kim Martin Raymond.
Peace and blessings, and welcome to this edition of the How Now podcast, where we talk about how to live in the now. I am your host, Kim Martin Raymond. I'm a minister, spiritual life coach, health and nutrition awareness coach, author, and founder of Redefining You LLC, where I help my clients to realign themselves mind, body, and spirit. And welcome to this edition of the show. If you are new to the How Now podcast, welcome. And make sure that you go to www.hownowpodcast.com. Pick your favorite podcast platform and be sure to like, follow, share, and subscribe. You can also scroll to the bottom of the page and it will take you to the banner for this week's show. And that will take you to the How Now YouTube channel, where you can like, follow, share, and subscribe and be notified to find out what's happening in the now. Again, that's www.hownowpodcast.com. So let's get the party started. Today, we're going to be talking about social remittance. And that may be a term that's unfamiliar to some, and to others, may be very dear and near to their hearts. So let's talk a little bit about what social remittance is first, and then we'll introduce my guest who is going to help us kind of go through the weeds on what social remittance really is all about. So when we think about social remittance, it is the ideas, behaviors, identities, and social capital that flow from receiving to sending country communities. Okay, so like I said, that's a mouthful, but you know, in order to bring some clarity to this topic is my wonderful guest. And as is customary with the How Now podcast, I'm going to have her to introduce herself at this time.
Hello, hello, Kim. Thank you so very much for the warm introduction and the warm welcome into the How Now podcast. So first of all, I have to let your audience know exactly who I am and why I can offer a little bit of context into your discussion item of social remittance. I am Dr. Michelle Simone Rencher, to be exact. My first name, Michelle, comes from my father, the late Michael Wallace. My middle name comes from my mother's favorite singer, the singer, songwriter, and truth teller, Nina Simone. I am a native of Nassau, Bahamas, but I live in the Bahamian diaspora. And I know a little bit of something about social remittance because I am a researcher. As a researcher, I recognize the importance of examining effective leadership and whether they have the capacity. The brain drain is something that happens when people move from one community to another community. And as we discussed today, a part of that movement, a part of that migration comes from social remittance. So as we dive into our discussion, Kim, let's take it away and share, engage, and learn more about this interesting phenomenon.
Like you said, you are a native of Nassau, Bahamas. And so tell me a little bit about your history in, migrating from there. So you migrated from there, you said, like you said, to the Bahamian diaspora. Talk a little bit about how that process took place.
Certainly. So I moved primarily for education purposes. Most people in the Bahamas travel because we live so close to the U.S. We are minutes from the mainland U.S. in terms of South Florida. Mm-hmm. And so people in the Bahamas travel for shopping, you travel for business. But the number by Bahamians travel, especially from the Bahamas into the United States, is for academic pursuit. We do have education purposes in the Bahamas. We do have third tertiary level institutions in the Bahamas. But by and large, it has become a rite of passage over the past 60 years for Bahamians to travel to the U.S., to Canada, to the U.K. and beyond for educational purposes. And that's how my journey began. And so after high school, it's a rite of passage. You go off to school. Mm-hmm. In the Bahamas, if you are a native Bahamian, some people stay in the country, but most students that I knew back when I went to high school were looking forward to beginning their academic journey somewhere else. And it's simply because typically most of our academic desires are not necessarily available in the Bahamas or available in the wider Caribbean region. And so we go off to school as to students in the U.S. globally. You leave home, you spread your wings, you want to explore and examine the world. And education is usually the easiest and the fastest way to begin your adult journey. And that's how I began mine.
Awesome. Awesome. You know, because I think about other countries, and I think about, you know, people coming to the U.S. for education purposes. Then you have some countries that have, you know, higher standards in education as well, you know, and based on resources and availability, there are some who have, you know, a higher academia level, and then they come to the U.S. And you know, my question, I guess, is, was the expectation what you thought it would be when you came to, you know, begin your studies here in the U.S.? Was there a difference?
First off, you have to understand, when I left the Bahamas, I had experienced maybe a year of a junior college experience, mm-hmm. as opposed to a bachelor's degree experience. Totally different when it looks at, you know, one is chalk and one is cheese, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the difference is that I believe academically, I was ready for the rigors, because I had gone to a school that really pushed and stressed not only science and technology and engineering courses, but that was really strong in the writing aspects. So in the Bahamas, we paid a lot of emphasis in our language skills, our ability to write, to be able to tell our own narrative was extremely important, which is something different that you typically see in the U.S. when it comes to the writing standards. It's a little bit different. We read a lot. We read a lot of European novels, absolutely, because we are a former British colony. So we were stemmed in the whole narrative of what was happening in colonialism and a lot of European novels. But I also had the opportunity to explore Caribbean authors such as V.S. Mm-hmm. Nayapal and Derek Walcott. And we also read Nigerian authors like Chinua Achebe. So we were very well exposed to what was happening around the world and what was happening at that time politically and socially. So my educational journey pushed me head on into a four-year engineering program in the state of Ohio, actually, where I got completely immersed with other Caribbean and other African diaspora students. So experience was totally different than I would have had I stayed in the Bahamas.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. And so it's wonderful because, you know, you hear about comparisons and they're saying, well, you know, we had a much higher standard. Our education system, you know, was a little more rigorous. Right. And so, you know, it's nice when you come in, like you said, I guess you get that opportunity to experience the diaspora, you know, within it. So there was a wonderful balance there.
Absolutely.
So again, like I said, I gave a little introduction in the beginning about social remittance. So let's talk about how that affects, you know, or how the effects of your education, you know, played a part in this social remittance, or what social remittance means to you.
So first of all, I love your definition. It's textbook, it's classic, it covers any possible facet of social remittance. But what it doesn't do, unfortunately, is tell the lived experience of social remittance. So as a migrant, as an immigrant, and in the words of the United Nations, I'm considered to be a high-skilled migrant. Mm. There's a difference, because there are persons who have the ability to achieve baccalaureate, master's, and even a PhD, as I've earned. Mm-hmm. And then there are persons who are more in the agricultural spaces who are considered to be migrants.
Yes.
And so, you know, they are migrating either for agricultural purposes, they're migrating for political and for social challenges in their home countries. Persons like myself who have left the Caribbean region, who've left the Bahamas, or even the remaining parts of the diaspora, when we migrate to our high-skilled migrants, what we are doing is seeking education, we are seeking a professional pursuit, we are seeking a better quality of life, but we are also seeking the opportunity to send back home social remittance.
Yeah.
And social remittance, in terms of a person like myself from the Caribbean region, what we send back is not always dollars and cents. Mm. You know, I'm certain everybody has been to the corner bodega in New York, or
yes,
a local grocery store in like Kroger or Publix. And there's typically a Western Union.
Right.
And people go there, and you see a long line most times, yes. And people are sending money, currency, to and from a home country and the U.S. So you see signs in different languages, right. You see every country around the world flag, and you may even see the Bahamas flag a time or two. But what you will not see is what you typically experience if you are a social remitter. Now, yes, you can send back currency, which is financial remittance.
Yes.
And that's always important because oftentimes when you leave home, you leave family members back at home who don't have the same opportunities to make the kind of money that you have to make in the U.S. They don't have the same job quality. Maybe they need funds to survive or need funds to do certain very specific things. In the case of me, I had my father passed away a number of years ago. And in order to have him buried in a really respectable manner, we had to send money back home to take care of his funeral services or take care of the headstone and the burial process. That is a form of financial remittance.
Right.
Now, the social remittance comes in the form of ideas. It comes in the form of fashion. It comes in the form of music and in movies. So the most important form of social remittance in the Bahamas happened to my immediate family. So in the Bahamas, we have a lot of heroes, a lot of persons who have done momentous and amazing things around the world. But the most famous of all Bahamians is Sidney Poitier.
Yeah.
Sidney Poitier was a screen idol, right?
Yes.
He's that man from To Sir With Love to all of his other movies, Lilies of the Valley, all those movies that he has starred in and put on the map. There's that. And so in my family, the most iconic form of social remittance was the slap in the heat of the night, that slap that was heard around the world. So the story goes that Sidney Poitier, who happens to be also my grandmother's second cousin, she was.
Oh, wow.
So I come from on my mother's side, Ruth Poitier Clark was her married name. So they were second cousins. So, but I would only see him at funerals and, you know. Don't know him personally, you know, that kind of cousin who you don't really see him very often. But he was busy living his life, right? So in social remittance in my family, the story goes that Sidney Poitier, in the heat of the night, he signed a contract with the movie studios and said, I want to make the movie as written. The slap needs to be in the movie. It's important to the movie. It's so important. I mean, if I tell you the movie, you're like, I kind of remember the movie.
Yeah.
But if I tell you about that scene, you know that scene. And so he recognized in reading the script how important it was. And so not only was it important and written into his contract, that he would actually have a fixed salary because he wanted to have that slap written into the movie and filmed and edited the way that it needs to be so that it could be seen around the world.
Yes.
And so every single movie theater that movie was seen in, when In the Heat of the Night came out, it could not be edited out. It could not be condensed. It could not be shortened. And it had to be aired and viewed the way that it was intended to be.
Yes.
That's a risky move when you think about when that movie was made.
Yes.
The most important thing about that was that the amount of residual money that he made on the back end, he was able to demonstrate what social remittance truly means, not only to your immediate family, but to an entire world. So what he did with that money was that he actually sent money back home. He bought his mother a home. He bought cars for people. That's typical.
Yes.
But what he also did was buy some plane tickets. And with those plane tickets, it wasn't for himself to travel. The then premier of the Bahamas was in the process of negotiating with the Queen of England.
Oh, wow.
The independence of the Bahamas, liberation. So liberation came with remittance. So social remittance has an opportunity to change ideas. It has the opportunity to change perspectives. It has the opportunity to also bring liberation. And so when you think about social remittance, yes, it's fashion. Absolutely, it's music, it's film. It can be a way of food. It could be the way that certain people are now becoming vegan. And then you say, okay, well, I'm watching Tabitha Brown online and I send the YouTube videos back to the Bahamas. And so now I have family members who are following Tabitha Brown and we are coming to Target to buy Tabitha Brown products and buy the sunshine with the McCormick spices.
Right.
That's all social remittance. But Sidney Poitier demonstrated that Bahamian Bahamians who leave the Bahamas, who are still having a strong affinity for their home community, feel so entitled, feel so committed to improving the quality of life to their home communities. They are insistent that they are going to do something with their skill and their ability to change and improve lives in their home country. And so Sidney Poitier bought tickets for the premier of the Bahamas and others to travel to London, England, and go and see the Queen. And in the Bahamas, our narrative is that the gentleman who was flown on the plane, his name is Lyndon Pinling. So Lyndon Oscar Pinling was his title. And so Lyndon Oscar Pinling is entitled in the Bahamas, our Black Moses.
Wow.
Because he went to the biblical Pharaoh at that time, the Queen of England, and said, let my people go.
Yes.
But the person who was the financier of that move, the person who said, yeah, I'm going to make this contract do what it do. Yeah. I'm going to change the world with a slap.
Yeah.
And so he used his craft, he used his talent, but he also used his negotiation skills. And that is the most important thing about social remittance, because it allows us to not only exist, but and not only to live, but really and truly to thrive in an environment that oftentimes was not designed for you to thrive.
Right.
But you are able to flip the script. You're able to change the narrative and demonstrate your affinity, your love, and your passion, and your commitment to your home community. So you can be someplace, you can live over here, and still benefit over here at the same time.
My goodness. How powerful is that?
A powerful experience.
Incredibly powerful, because just like you said, typically all you hear about is, you know, people standing online, Western Union, people at the airports carrying back so many things in their suitcases, or sending, you know, barrels back with things that are in there. My husband's family is originally from Haiti, and, you know, sending items back home is important.
And those things are important. Things like those things are vital for existence, right? Yes. Everybody needs lotion. Everybody needs a new pair of shoes, right?
Right.
Those things are important for our for our sustainability. Right. But it's the social remittance that changes the future.
Yes.
And so Sidney Poitier in one movie changed the entire trajectory of an entire nation.
That's right. And that's so critical. Like you said, that's so important, that social piece, because it is. It's a matter of, you know, sending back. So you're helping the people of your native country to thrive. And you said that, you know, they have to be able to live and to be able to thrive and to change the narrative.
It also creates a blueprint for what comes next. And so you have generations of us who are following in his footsteps. Sidney Poitier, after all of his movies, in his final years, became the ambassador emeritus of the Bahamas.
Yeah.
So he is the blueprint of what is called Abraham Maslow, the psychologist, coined the phrase of, we all know Maslow's theory, hierarchy of needs, that human being needs certain things. The very bottom is the basic needs of clean water and food. Above that, you have your security. Above that, you have the ability to exist and feel and be seen and see and be seen. But the very tip top of that pyramid exists the self-actualization.
Right.
And that means it is a desire for every human being to be all that he or she was determined and destined to be.
Right.
And Sidney Poitier made it okay for those of us who are self-actualizers, people who have a desire for more learning. They go on and get a PhD. People who have a desire to be the best in athletics, and they run until they literally lose their composure. They are on the ground, flattened, with nothing else to give. They are self-actualizers. People who, like Sidney Poitier, was not an academician, was not an athlete, but what he was an actor extraordinaire. And so when he walked in the room, and when his shoulders broadened, and when he spoke,
there's a presence.
So eloquently, his presence took up the room. Yeah. And so even the man who was slapped took a deep breath like, whoo, I've been slapped by Sidney Poitier. Right. There's a reason why when I was in high school, we sang To Soar With Love.
Yes.
Because he gave us the blueprint of how to be Bahamian in this space when people only see us as sun, sand, and sea, and bringing them a cool beverage.
Right.
He demonstrates, like, listen, yeah, we are those, we appreciate you for coming to play in our backyard.
Yes.
But we also lead the entire world when it comes to high-skilled migration. Yeah. We lead the world.
Yeah.
We are leading the world. We are runners. First and foremost, we in the Caribbean region, we're gonna run the mm-hmm. I mean literally run our shoes off when right. it comes to the Olympics, right? We have the fastest arms and legs on the planet. We got the 1, 2, and 4 on lock.
Right, right.
But we also run away from home the fastest. Mm. And it has been considered a problem in terms of it's being called the brain drain. But one of my missions is to make certain that the world and our Caribbean region recognizes that we are not a drain on our society.
Mm.
In fact, we are the gain.
Yeah.
We are the gain. And I encourage our community of Caribbean people, our diaspora, the Caribbean diaspora, and even the African diaspora, to tap into the brilliance that you gave birth to. That yeah. you have allowed to live throughout your wider diaspora and recognize us for our ability to impart social remittance. Allow us to send back ideas. Allow us to send back strategies and approach that we use in our mechanisms of our daily existence today.
Yeah.
So allow us to be a part of your brain gain. You can gain from our expertise. Yeah. You don't have to hire consultants who don't look like you any longer.
Right.
You don't have to hire expertise from across the pond. You can tap into your own ethnic, authentic expertise. We homegrown.
Yeah.
We as Sun Michaud, the linguist, says, we out here.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. That's right. I absolutely love it. I mean, so many beautiful nuggets there when we're talking about, you know, like you said, high skill migration. And we're talking about that brain drain and just talking about just being able to embrace so many of the wonderful resources that we all bring, so many of the talents and so many of the skills that we bring, and to be able to hone in on those and to be able to you know, have, you know, draw from those things. And then, like you said, bringing that financial piece back to also help to support that, so that as we're bringing those social remittances back, that we also are providing those finances so that way we can further execute them once they're
Absolutely.
Done. Because I think that that's key in remembering, you know, it's not just to bring, you know, to provide social remittance and then to just sit down and not, you know, give people the tools and then not help
and
them
put it in action.
Successful in putting it in action.
Because we know faith without work is dead, right?
It's dead.
We must be able to provide that work. And so the social remittance is so important because oftentimes it has been overlooked.
Yeah.
It has been consistently overlooked for generations. But I recognized in my study that there are so many examples of Bahamians who are self-actualizers, who are a part of the so-called brain drain, who are high-skilled migrants, who have demonstrated how important it is to submit and to really and truly participate in social remittance. Another example that I'll offer you is a gentleman by the name of Fred Prepaul. Not a name that most people know about, but he happened to go to my high school. He happened to live on the same street that I did. But Fred Prepaul is interesting because he left Nassau, Bahamas on a basketball scholarship.
Okay.
Went to study architecture in Texas and graduated, did very well academically, got his master's degree, did very well, joined an architectural firm.
Mm-hmm.
That architectural firm got purchased by the largest architectural firm in the state of Texas. He did the work. He worked hard, was focused, committed, got married, raised his family, did more work, more focused, committed work. And when the time came, he had the opportunity to redesign T.D. Jakes's Potter's House.
Oh, wow.
So that was an awesome opportunity, right? Put him on the map. People are now talking and whispering and, oh my gosh, he's from our hometown. Like, yay,
yes.
Hometown boy made good. But guess what he also did? Wrote a letter to the Ministry of Health mm-hmm. and said, you know, I've heard the hospital system needs some work. I'd like to offer some suggestions. As an architect, I want to offer you the opportunity to partner. Let's get into a partnership. Let me help you help yourself. And he redesigned the hospital in which he was born.
Wow.
And so not only is he sending cash home for his mommy and his sister and his auntie and his cousins, and those things are so important for daily existence.
Yes.
But to redesign a hospital system changes the way that healthcare is delivered through the entire country. That is what social remittance is. It changes the entire way of looking at yourself, perceiving who you are, because you now have better healthcare outcomes because of a new hospital system. You've widened the corridors, making it more accessible. Yeah. You've raised the roof on the way that healthcare is delivered throughout the entire archipelago. So another example is Jonquil Jones. Jonquil Jones is from Grand Bahama, one of the most northern islands in the Bahamas. Went to high school on a basketball scholarship also. She was the 2022 WNBA Player of the Year.
Wow.
With her earnings, her bonus of her, because she was made the Player of the Year, she decided to pave basketball courts in the Bahamas. That's social remittance. That's not standing in the line at Western Union, although that is so very vital. I'm sure in her case, that was probably a big money transfer. That wasn't a Western Union transfer. That's not MoneyGram, right? But she did the same thing that Fred Papal did the self same thing that Sir Sidney Poitier did. And so each of us in our own way, and even if you are not from the Bahamas or the Caribbean region or the African diaspora, we are all from some diaspora from someplace else. Because people move from Georgia to New York City, or from South Carolina to Ohio, or from Ohio to California, or from California to Vegas, and from Vegas to Dubai, and from Dubai to, and I'm giving you some global shout outs because the world is wide, right?
Yeah.
And it is shrinking by the moment. And so regardless of where you are from and where you reside, there are always opportunities to socially remit. The challenge is that oftentimes people leave home and they make a phone call every now and then, or they may text, or they may like or post something on social media. But even in your posting on social media, that also is a form of social remittance. The next time you share and like and follow a podcast with somebody else who does not live in your zip code, you are socially remitting. Every single time you share something on YouTube with someone else who does not live in your house, you are socially remitting. You are sharing ideas. You are sharing perspectives. You are sharing thoughts and dreams, because you never know, somebody who may watch and say, "Ooh, that's that. Yeah, I felt that. That's a little heavy right there. That's a moment." Or even somebody says, "I knew that was something." They get an aha moment. They get that euphoria, that energy that goes in the back of your spinal column and goes down your fingertips and puts thought into motion, makes you want to jump into an action pose.
That's right.
And so my challenge to people is that as you are thinking about the topic of social remittance, my journey to social remittance began when I was in a posture of learning. And I thought that when I was in the university that I knew everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I now know that even with a PhD, I know this much.
Right.
But I have learned in this journey that becoming a lifelong learner allows me to not only survive in the challenging moments of life, but it truly allows me to thrive. And when you are a social remitter, it means that you're constantly giving and giving and giving. To me, that is affirming of life, because it means that your hands are always open to receive from someone else. And you never know where the next wonderful idea, you never know where the next perspective, you never know where the next partnership may come from.
That's right. That's right. My goodness. Like I said, powerful words. Just like you said, it is like you were talking about in Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that top part being that self-actualization.
Mm-hmm.
Once you achieve that, you know, and then just think about the pride that you have in your community in you know, the place that you were birthed. You know, it's important that we have a level of pride, and that's a part of our self-actualization, because it is a part of who we are as human beings, as individuals. It's who makes us what we are. And so when you talk about that, when you talk about the whole aspect of social remittance and it not just being exclusive to one diaspora, you know, it affects all of us in even the smallest ways. You know, and I want people to really have paid attention to that. When you talk about social remit, there are so many ways in which we can socially remit. Like you said, we always talk about giving back, you know, but how are we giving back? And it is it in a way that is going to help people to thrive? That's important, because even that financial piece is such a small part, because that's temporary. You know, we may be able to, you know, yeah, we can use those finances just for a small moment, but then when those finances are gone, or if for some reason those finances get exhausted, what do we have in the form of social remittance that we can go back and use that's going to help us to thrive? You know, it's not just a matter, like you said, of handing you a check or handing you a couple of dollars. If I don't know what to do with those dollars, how am I going to sustain?
If there is no blueprint.
Correct.
And then also, not only the blueprint, but there must also be a certain level of motivation. Yes. There must also be a certain level of resilience, because you have to be a person that recognizes, okay, this is not forever. So what am I going to do the next time? And so I need to, in order for you to thrive, you have to have a plan. Because if you don't plan, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail.
That's right.
And it's a given. But I was offering you the next thing that I thought of, was that when I went to undergrad, mm-hmm. I had my GCEO levels, which is a British-based examination. And you asked earlier about how our school systems were different. Mm-hmm. I entered seventh grade, and we call junior high school, call it all high school in the Bahamas. But when I entered seventh grade, the Bahamas was only 10 years old. Mm-hmm. So we had a very colonized perspective when it came to curriculum. We studied the poetry of the 1940s Europe in the 1980s. We studied nothing about Black culture. There was very little about anything of the African experience, other than they were slaves. We didn't have the language that we have today, that they were formerly enslaved persons that was their condition. It wasn't who they were. Yeah. That was the experience. While I had amazingly a wealth of knowledge of my ancestry from my immediate family members. We even have the names of those persons of my family who first were enslaved and arrived on Bahamian soil, and that is through family lore. But unfortunately, when I arrived in university, what I had was sweaters and coats and jeans, but I had little awareness of the political and even the social perspectives of the diaspora. Right. Knew very little of it. I knew the name of like Idi Amin. I knew, you know, where South Africa was on a map. I kind of knew, you know, Patrice Lumumba's name. I didn't really know what was he fighting for. Not quite sure about Steve Biko. Just a few random names here or there. But it wasn't so much a ingrained perspective.
Right.
I gained social remittance when I was in university. The persons who I had classes with, the persons who I partnered with projects with, the persons who I sat and broke bread with, and who I met in the Black Student Union, who were from the African diaspora, they are the persons who poured into me. I received their generosity of sharing their wealth of experience from their Ghanaian and their Nigerian and their South African and Liberian and Kenyan experiences. And likewise, I shared with them my Bahamian experience. And we soon formed a tribe. Many of us had to go to Western Union and MoneyGram because we were broke college students.
Right.
And your parents living at home, you need $300 to pay for your lab fees and that kind of stuff. Or, you know, my rent is due like tomorrow. Can you go to the bank and Western Union? That was our reality as poor broke students. But it was also a conversation of me to be able to recognize the importance that the persons in my family who socially remitted into me at a very early age were those persons who, unlike me, did not have education. So social remittance does not require a formal plan of action. Neither does it require high levels of education. The persons who most poured into my life were my grandfathers and my grandmothers. My parents had the access to education. Both of my parents were academicians. So that while they may have had struggles and challenges because they were born in a colonized Bahamas and mm-hmm. they did not experience majority rule until a few years after they were married, a very challenging experience, clearly. But my grandparents were denied access to education. But yet they thrived. And yet they made life out of limestone. They made a wonderful lives and they socially remitted into my life. Mm-hmm. They poured and they spoke and they prayed and they even prophesied. My grandfather, on the night of Bahamian independence in 1973, I was a baby, asleep on my grandmother's bed, on her bed. My mother tells the story and everybody in my family has told this story ad infinitum, so much so that I know it in my, yeah. my root, in my DNA. He was a police officer. He was getting ready to go to the parade to presentation of the flag coming down and the Union Jack coming down, the British flag and the Bahamian mm-hmm. flag going up for the very first time. He woke me up because he wanted to look in my eyes. And he mm-hmm. said, according to my mother, that he wanted to see freedom in my eyes.
Wow.
That I was going to see the freedom at the same time as he was for the first time. He was born in 1919. My grandmother was born in 1922, in the height of the Great Depression.
Yeah.
So if the Depression occurred in the U.S. and in Canada and the U.K., what do you think it was like in the Bahamas?
Mm.
Just saying.
Wow.
My grandmother did not go beyond second grade. Not because she didn't have the capacity to, because she was denied. That was not what you did.
Yeah.
Black and brown women did not go to school beyond second grade. However, if there was ever a person who was born in a different time and a different place, if my grandmother was born in any other country on the planet in a different time and a different place, we would now be saying Coco Chanel who?
Right.
There would never be a House of Versace. There would have never been a Martha Stewart. There would have never been a Julia Child. But it is those life lessons of resilience and living in grace and living in style and living in abundance that they poured and spoke into my life. And so when I went to university, yes, I had sweaters and I had my exams and exam results and I had my transcripts and I had all these hopes and dreams. I was pushed into a season of a posture of learning, absolutely. But I was pushed into the next season of my family's trajectory.
Yeah.
And social remittance has that ability to shift and change lives and yeah. make a difference in people's lives. And it also makes the person, not only the person who is the recipient, it makes the sender
yeah.
that much more powerful in the yeah. universe. Because when you have the opportunity to shift and send and share ideas out to the universe, yeah. to your family, yes, to your community, absolutely. But to the universe, that makes you so powerful. Because when we are standing in the light of no one but our own, listen, the creator is celebrating and say, this is what I made you for. Yeah. Now you get it.
That's
I didn't make you to stand on somebody's job nine to five and that's it. We must work. Absolutely. We must do. We must fold sheets and we must cook for our families and we must mow our lawns and we must bring our mail outside of the mailbox and we must walk our dog and feed our cat. We must do the things of life. We must do yeah. life.
Yeah.
But we must also give and share and pour and speak. And when we do those things, we are being our authentic selves.
Okay.
And that is what I believe when we are socially remitting,
right.
when we allow ourselves the opportunity to socially remit, we are truly being what I believe is what God said. Very good.
That's it. That's it. It is our purpose. It is what drives us.
Because of all of God's creations, we are the only creation that he critically analyzed, critically examined, mm. using that simple phrase of very. The simple word, a four-letter word, very. He didn't say, eh, it's all right. He didn't say, yeah, you good. Nah, he said, nah, very good.
Very good.
Very good. And so when we have the opportunity to socially remit, to engage in social remittance, to be on the recipient side means that somebody has believed enough in you. Somebody cares enough. Somebody is compassionate enough. Somebody sees your need, and recognizes your importance and your value and wants to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just sitting by and saying, oh my, woo-woo.
Right.
That person wants to be engaged in your life. And so when they send, whether it's currency through Western Union and MoneyGram, whether it is sending an idea through the internet, whether it's simply sharing a like, or simply adding a heart to your podcast view, or sharing the podcast in its entirety to another viewer, another listener, you recognize that they value you. They see you. They say, Kim, we see you. We hear you. We here for your next discussion. What you got next, Kim?
Right.
You got people on there who are amazing, who see life, who recognize that there's value in so many perspectives.
Right.
And when
and
you
it's
say,
not just something.
How now can we do this?
That's right.
How can we not but do these things? How
and it's not something, like you said, that you're going to find in a textbook. And that, like you said, you don't have to have a doctorate. You don't have to have a higher level of education. We all have a story to tell. We all have something. That's how our history was developed, through storytelling and through our experiences. And just like you said, you know, it wasn't just a matter of what you experienced while you were in university. It was the relationships that you developed with others and the experiences that they shared. And those things are not found in textbooks.
And
they're
found so
in the minds and the hearts of our ancestors.
So generous. And it's so in a, and when you speak about ancestors, this is why in my family, the names are not written. But we have been taught their names again and again and again, to the point where I can say, my name is Michelle Simone. I come from Jesslyn Eileen. She came from Ruth Louise Poitier Clark. Ruth Louise Poitier Clark came from Beatrice Arabella. Beatrice Arabella came from Cynthiana Pintard, and Cynthiana Pintard came from Anna Gould, and she came from Africa. And so it's that few years that we came from that journey. So in my family, we know exactly the timeline of when she would have arrived. And we call her name. She apparently, as far as our family lore goes, was a young girl by the time she arrived enslaved in the Bahamas, in a tiny little community on the west end of Nassau called Adelaide, a former colony. But again, from Anna Gould, you have Michelle Simone. And we call her name every now and then. We call Cynthiana Pintard, and we call my, who I call my mama, was Beatrice, and my Grammy, and my mummy.
Yes.
And we call their names. My children know to call their names.
Yes.
This Sunday coming is Mother's Day, and we plan to call their names, because these are the women, these are the generations who have socially remitted into our lives. They didn't have MoneyGram. They didn't have Cash App.
Right.
Okay.
That's right.
They didn't have Instagram. They had no social media. They had no platform. But what they did have, their platform was plaiting someone's hair and telling a story.
Yes.
Their platform was rubbing your skin down and telling you, that's that little scar on your hand. Go get you some coconut oil and rub it down a couple of times.
Right.
They had no Shea Moisture.
Right.
No Nivea lotion. No.
Right. No oil of Olay. None of that. Right.
That was not a thing, but they poured and they gave what they had, and they gave and their gifts and their loving knowledge and their resilience and their ability and capacity to thrive demonstrates in our lives, how can we not, how now can we not do this now?
Right.
How can we not do that now? How is it? And so the way that we do those things is through social remittance.
Yeah.
Social media is the largest way that we socially remit. It is the most profound way. People think it is only currency. No, that is financial currency, and it is important. But we get our ideas and our perspectives.
Yeah.
We get our likes. We get our love today through social media. And that is the most important and prevalent way to socially remit. So social remittance, as you said, it's a sharing of ideas, is an exchange of perspectives.
Yeah.
And as an immigrant, I am grateful to be a part of your journey and be grateful to connect with my sister from another mister.
That's right. That's right.
Who
That's
also right. has a love of fabulous hair, whose skin is glowing, who loves jewelry, who understands that more is more. And that when we get together, anything can happen.
Anything. Anything. Oh my goodness. Hey, well, look, there's nothing more to be said.
there's going to be a part two or a part three. Stay tuned.
Look, we always know that here on How Now, we never know what's happening. That's right. We never know what's happening in the now. What's happening now is not what's happening, like I always say at the end of every show, 2 weeks, 2 years, 2 months from now. So yes, always welcome back to talk about this, because this is a wonderful topic. And just like we said, you know, we are socially remitting right now.
Because I see you, I'm feeling your vibes, yes. I'm learning from you, I'm recognizing, okay, she loves gourds, so maybe I need to kind of send her a gourd, send her some love to her gourds. Okay. I see she's a sister who loves her locks.
Yes.
She's into artwork, and she's definitely into her praying cloths behind her. Yes. So she's obviously in the same vein and same kind of energy. Absolutely. Maybe it's time for us to now say same channel next time.
That's it. Well, what we're going to do is let's tell people how they can get in contact with you, because, you know, like I said, you have such a beautiful energy. There's so much that can be learned, so many things that you can share. How can people get in contact with you if they're interested?
Absolutely. Thank you for asking. So you can find me on LinkedIn. Again, my name is Dr. Michelle Simone Rencher. You can find me on LinkedIn. I am a change agent. I am a researcher. And most of all, I am a motivated. I'm a mommy. I'm a wife. I'm a daughter of the Bahamas. I am open to be a part of discussions. I am here to tell stories and to share. And most of all, I am open for life.
Yes. Yes. That's a blessing. That's a blessing. So like I said, you can reach her through LinkedIn, and I'll definitely have that listed in the description for the show when it airs. And also, another question that I always ask all of my guests before we depart, how are you living in the now? How are you navigating in this space that we're in?
Listen, by saying yes to these kinds of conversations, I think it is so important to say yes in the now. We can always reschedule. We can always put off and postpone. But one of the things that I learned from my great-grandmothers and my grandmothers, who did not have my level of education, never saw many of the things that I see on a daily basis. I am living their wildest dreams. And it is important for me to not only live their dream, but to make their dreams come to life. Because I cannot believe this is all they were dreaming about. And so I want to make certain that I am also making a blueprint for others of my DNA and for other communities to say, if she can do that, then I can do this. And whatever your that is and whatever your this is, I want to be a part of inspiring and motivating people so that they can do whatever it is they are endeavoring to do.
Okay.
And as you said, social remittance, motivation. I am a hashtag motivation researcher. I study the topic of motivation. I study the brain drain, and I'm passionate about the brain gain. I love partnerships, and I'm here for conversations.
All right. Well, you guys, you all heard it right here from Dr. Michelle. And my middle name happens to be Michelle, just by the way. Yes.
See? So,
same way. So see, we're connected that way as well.
We are.
Okay.
We are.
But yes, you heard it right here from Dr. Michelle Simone Rencher. You have an opportunity to socially remit. Mm-hmm. So make sure that you're stepping out there, that you are taking time to pour into others, you know, and as you're pouring into others, you know, they always say you're never pouring from an empty cup. Remember to pour from a place of overflow. And that comes from self-actualization. That comes from pouring into yourself, so that as you pour into others, you're pouring from a place of overflow, so that you both can celebrate all the things that are going on around you, and you can embrace them. And it's not that you're giving all, you're giving some, but saving some for yourself as well. And so, you know, that's the best way, and you know, to keep us all in that space of thriving. So thank you so much, Dr. Michelle, for being here with us, for taking the time out of your schedule to pour into us and to socially remit into us. We are blessed that you are here, and know that you are always welcome back. Like you said, part two, part three, part 10, doesn't matter. You know, it's my show. You can come back as many times as you like. there is no set way that we do things around here. You know, we have a blueprint for life, but you know, we know that life is meant to be lived. So again, thank you so much for being here with us, and we appreciate you and wish you well in all that you endeavor to do. Okay, and that will do it, guys, for this edition of the How Now podcast, where we talk about how to live in the now. And until I see you the next time, I say peace.